all its power. An hour passed on, he came to a Mercedes-Benz off the road. Its right side drifted in sand up to the door panels. He opened one of the left-side doors and pulled the two wrinkled, monkey-like occupants out, an old woman wearing a lot of bangled jewelry, an old man with theatrical-looking white hair. Muttering, Trash took the keys from the ignition, went around, and opened the trunk. Their suitcases were not locked. He hung a variety of clothes over the windows of the Mercedes, weighting them down with rocks. Now he had a cool, dim cave. He crawled in and went to sleep. Miles to the west, the city of Las Vegas gleamed in the light of the summer sun. He couldn't drive a car, they had never taught him that in prison, but he could ride a bike. On July 4th, the day that Larry Underwood discovered Rita Blakemore had overdosed and died in her sleep, Trash Can Man took a 10-speed and began to ride. At first his progress was slow because his left arm wasn't much good to him. He fell off twice that first day, once squarely on his burn, causing terrible agony. By then the burn was suppurating freely through the Vaseline and the smell was terrific. He wondered from time to time about gangrene, but would not allow himself to wonder for long. He began to mix the Vaseline with an antiseptic ointment, not knowing if it would help, but feeling it certainly couldn't hurt any. It made a milky, viscous gloop that looked like semen. Little by little, he adjusted to riding the bike mostly one-handed and found that he could make good speed. The land had flattened out, and most of the time he could keep the bike speeding giddily along. He drove himself steadily in spite of the burn and the lightheadedness that came from being constantly stoned on morphine. He drank gallons of water and ate prodigiously. He pondered the dark man's words. "I will set you high in my artillery. You are the man I want." How lovely those words were. Had anyone really wanted him before? The words played over and over in his mind as he pedaled under the hot Midwestern sun. And he began to hum the melody of a little tune called "Down to the Nightclub" under his breath. The words, "Siavola, bump-de-bump-de-bump," came in their own good time. He was not then as insane as he was to become, but he was advancing. On July 8th, the day Nick Andros and Tom Cullen saw buffalo grazing in Comanche County, Kansas, Trash Can Man crossed the Mississippi at the Quad Cities of Davenport, Rock Island, Bettendorf, and Moline. He was in Iowa. On the 14th, the day Larry Underwood woke up near the Big White House in eastern New Hampshire, Trashy crossed the Missouri north of Council Bluffs and entered Nebraska. He had regained some use of his left hand. His leg muscles had toned up, and he pressed on, feeling a huge need to hurry. Hurry! It was on the west side of the Missouri that Trash first suspected that God himself might intervene between Trash Can Man and his destiny. There was something wrong about Nebraska, something dreadfully wrong, something that made him afraid. It looked about the same as Iowa, but it wasn't. The dark man had come to him every previous night in dreams, but when Trashy crossed into Nebraska, the dark man came no more. Instead, he began to dream about an old woman. In these dreams, he would find himself belly down in a cornfield, almost paralyzed with hate and fear. It was bright morning. He could hear flocks of crows cawing. In front of him was a screen of broad, sword-like corn leaves. Not wanting to, but powerless to stop himself, he would spread the leaves with a shaking hand and peer between them. He saw an old house in the middle of a clearing. The house was up on blocks or jacks or something. There was an apple tree with a tire swing hanging from one of the branches. And sitting on the porch was an old black woman playing a guitar and singing some old-time spiritual song. The song varied from dream to dream, and Trash Can knew most of them because he had once known a woman, the mother of a boy named Donald Merwin Elbert, who had sung many of the same songs as she did her housework. This dream was a nightmare, but not just because something exceedingly horrible happened at the end of it. At first you would have said there wasn't a frightening element in the whole dream. Corn, blue sky, old woman, tire swing. What could be frightening about those things? Old women didn't throw rocks and jeer, especially not old women that sang old home Jesus-jumping songs like "In That Great Getting Up Morning" and "By and By, Sweet Lord, By and By." It was the Carly Yateses of the world who threw rocks. But long before the dream ended, he was paralyzed with fear, as if it wasn't an old woman at all he was peeking at, but at some secret, some barely concealed light that seemed ready to break out all around her, to play over her with a fiery brilliance that would make the flaming oil tanks of Gary seem like so many candles in the wind, a light so bright it would chalk his eyes to cinders. And during this part of the dream, all he thought was, "Oh, please get me away from her. I don't want no part of that old biddy. Please, oh, please get me out of Nebraska." Then whatever song she had been playing would come to a discordant, jangling stop. She would look right at the place where he was peeping through a tiny loophole in the broad lattice of leaves. Her face was old and seamed with wrinkles. Her hair was thin enough to show her brown skull, but her eyes were bright as diamonds, full of the light he feared. In an old, cracked but strong voice, she would cry out, "Weasels in the corn!" And he would feel the change in himself, and would look down to see he had become a weasel, a furry brownish-black slinking thing, his nose grown long and sharp, his eyes melted down to beady black points, his fingers turned into claws. He was a weasel, a cowardly nocturnal thing preying on the weak and the small. He would begin to scream then, and eventually he would scream himself awake, streaming with sweat and bug-eyed. His hands would fly over his body, reassuring himself that all his human parts were still there. At the end of this panicky check, he would grip his head, making sure it was still a human head and not something long and sleek and streamlined, furry and bullet-shaped. He crossed 400 miles of Nebraska in 3 days, running mostly on high-octane terror. He crossed into Colorado near Julesburg, and the dream began to fade and grow sepia-toned. For Mother Abigail's part, she woke on the night of July 15th, shortly after Trash Can Man had passed north of Hemingford home, with a terrible chill and a feeling that was both fear and pity. Pity for whom or for what she did not know. She thought she might have been dreaming of her grandson Anders, who had been killed senselessly in a hunting accident when he was but 6. On July 18th, then southwest of Sterling, Colorado, and still some miles from Brush, he had met the kid. Trash woke up just as twilight was falling. In spite of the clothes he had hung over the windows, the Mercedes had gotten hot. His throat was a dry well which had been faced with sandpaper. His temples thumped and jumped. He ran his tongue out, and when he stroked it with his finger, it felt like a dead tree branch. Sitting up, he put his hand on the Mercedes's steering wheel and then drew it back with a scalded hiss of pain. He had to wrap his shirt tail around the door handle to let himself out. He thought he would just step out, but he had overestimated his strength and underestimated how far the dehydration had advanced on this August evening. His legs collapsed and he fell onto the road, which was also hot. Moaning, he scrabbled his way into the shadow of the Mercedes like a crippled crawdad. He sat there, arms and head dangling between his cocked knees, panting. He stared morbidly at the two bodies he had pulled out of the car, she with her bangles on her shriveled arms and he with his shock of theatrical white hair above his mummified monkey face. He must get to Cibola before the sun came up tomorrow morning. If he didn't, he would die, and in sight of his goal. Surely the dark man could not be as cruel as that. Surely not. "My life for you," Trash Can Man whispered, and when the sun had dropped below the line of the mountains, he gained his feet and began to walk toward the towers, minarets, and avenues of Cibola, where the sparks of the lights were coming on again. As the heat of the day segued into the cool of the desert night, he found himself more able to walk. His sprung and rope-tied sneakers flapped and thudded against the surface of I-15. He was plodding along, his head hanging like the bloom of a dying sunflower, and did not see the green reflectorized sign which read, "Las Vegas, 30, when he passed it. He was thinking about the kid. By rights, the kid should have been with him now. They should be driving into Cibola together, with the straight pipes of the kid's deuce coupe blatting back echoes from the desert. But the kid had proved unworthy, and Trash had been sent on alone into the wilderness. His feet rose and fell on the pavement. Siabola, he croaked. Bumpty, bumpty, bump. Around midnight he collapsed by the side of the road and fell into an uneasy doze. The city was closer now. He would make it. He was quite sure he would make it. He heard the kid a long time before he saw him. It was the heavy, crackling roar of unmuffled straight pipes thundering toward him from the east, branding the day. The sound was coming up Highway 34 from the direction of Yuma, Colorado. His first impulse was to hide, the way he'd hidden from the few other survivors he'd seen since Gary. But this time something made him stay where he was, astride his bike on the shoulder of the road, looking back apprehensively over his shoulder. The thunder grew louder and louder, and then the sun was reflecting off chrome and... fire? Something bright and orange. The driver saw him, downshifted in a machine-gun burst of backfires. Goodyear rubber peeled off on the highway in hot swatches. And then the car was beside him, not idling but panting like a deadly animal which may or may not be tamed, and the driver was getting out. But at first Trash Can only had eyes for the car. He knew about cars, he liked cars, even though he had never gotten so much as a learner's permit. This one was a beauty, a car someone had worked on for years, put thousands of dollars into. The kind of thing you usually only saw at funny car shows, a labor of love. It was a 1932 Ford Deuce Coupe, but the owner had not stinted nor stopped with the usual Deuce Coupe customizing innovations. He had gone on and on, turning it into a parody of all American cars, a glittering science fiction vehicle with hand-painted flames billowing out of the manifold pipes. The paint job was flake gold. The chrome headpipes, which stretched almost the whole length of the car, reflected the sun fiercely. The windshield was a convex bubble. The back tires were gigantic Goodyear wide ovals, the wheel wells cut to an exaggerated height and depth to accommodate them. Growing out of the hood like a weird heating duct was a supercharger. Growing out of the roof, solid black but shot with red flecks like embers, was a steel shark fin. Written on both sides were two words, raked backward to indicate speed. The Kid, they said. "Hi-yaw, long, tall, and ugly," the driver drawled, and Trash shifted his attention from the painted flames to the driver of this rolling bomb. He stood about 5'3". His hair was piled and swirled and pomaded and brilliantined. The hair alone gave him another 3 inches of height. The swirls all met above his collar in what was not just a duck's ass, but the avatar of all the duck's ass hairdos ever affected by the punks and hoods of the world. He was wearing black boots with pointed toes. The sides were elasticized. The heels, which gave the kid another 3 inches, bringing him up to a respectable 5'9" total, were stacked Cubans. His pegged and faded jeans were tight enough to read the dates of the coins in his pockets. They limbed each nifty little buttock into a kind of blue sculpture, and made his crotch look like he'd maybe stuffed a chamois bag full of Spalding golf balls in there. He wore a Western-style silk shirt of an off-burgundy color. It was decorated with yellow trim and imitation sapphire buttons. The cufflinks looked like polished bone, and Trash later found out that was just what they were. The kid had two sets, one made from a pair of human molars, the other from the incisors of a Doberman pincher. Over this wonder of a shirt, in spite of the heat of the day, he wore a black leather motorcycle jacket with an eagle on the back. It was crisscrossed with zippers, the teeth glimmering like diamonds. From the shoulder flaps and waist belt, three rabbit's feet dangled. One was white, one brown, one bright St. Paddy's Day green. This jacket, even more wonderful than the shirt, creaked smugly with rich oil. Above the eagle, this time written in white silk thread, were the words, "The Kid." The face now looking up at the trash can man from between the high pile of gleaming hair and the upturned collar of the gleaming motorcycle jacket was tiny and pallid, a doll's face, with heavy but flawlessly sculpted pouting lips, dead gray eyes, a wide forehead without a mark or a seam, and strange full cheeks. He looked like Baby Elvis. Two gun belts were crisscrossed on his flat belly, and a giant .45 leaned out of each of the sagging holsters on his hips. "Hey, boy, what y'all say?" the kid drawled. and the only thing Trash Can could think of to say was, "I like your car." It was the right thing, maybe the only thing. 5 minutes later, Trash was in the passenger seat and the Deuce Coupe was accelerating up to the kid's cruising speed, which was about 95. The bike Trash had ridden all the way from eastern Illinois was fading to a speck on the horizon. Timidly, Trash Can Man suggested that at such a speed the kid would not be able to see a wreck or a stall in the road if they came to one. They had already come to several, as a matter of fact. The kid simply slalomed around them, the wide ovals shrieking unheeded protest. "Hey, boy," the kid said, "I got the reflexes, I got the timing, I got 3/5 of a second. You believe that?" "Yes, sir," Trash said faintly. He felt like a man who has just used a stick to stir up a nest of snakes. "I like you, boy," the kid said in his odd droning voice. His doll's eyes stared out over the fluorescent orange steering wheel at the shimmering road. Large styrofoam dice with death's heads for pips dangled and bounced from the rearview mirror. "Get y'all a beer out in the back seat." They were Coors, and they were warm, and Trash Can Man hated beer, and he drank one fast and said how good it was. "Hey, boy," the kid said, "Coors beer's the only beer. I'd piss Coors if I could. You believe that, Happy Crappy?" Trash Can said he did indeed believe that, Happy Crappy. "They call me the Kid, out of Shreveport, Louisiana. You know that? This here beast won every major car show award in the South. You believe that, Happy Crappy?" Trash Can Man said he did and got another warm beer. It seemed like the best move under the circumstances. "What they call you, boy?" "The Trash Can Man." "The what?" For one horrible moment, the dead doll's eyes rested on Trash Can's face. "You joking me, boy? Ain't nobody jokes the kid. And you better believe that, Happy Crappy." "I do believe it," Trash Can said earnestly. "But that's what they call me. Because I used to light fires in people's trash cans and mailboxes and stuff. I set old Lady Semple's pension check on fire. I got sent to the reformatory for it. I also burned down the Methodist church in Poutonville, Indiana." "Did you?" the kid asked, delighted. "Boy, you sound as crazy as a rat in a shithouse. That's okay. I like crazy people. I'm crazy myself. Tripped right out of my fucking gourd. Trash Can Man, huh? I like that. We make a pair, the fucking kid and the fucking Trash Can Man. Shake, Trash!" The kid offered his hand, and Trash shook it as quick as he could so that the kid could put both hands back on the wheel. They whizzed around a bend, and there was a beacon's semi nearly blocking the whole highway, and Trash Can put his hands over his face, prepared to make an immediate transition to the astral plane. The kid never turned a hair. The Deuce Coupe skittered along the left side of the highway like a water bug, and they skinned by the cab of the truck with a coat of paint to spare. "Close," Trash Can said when he felt he could speak without a quaver in his voice. "Hey, boy," the kid said flatly. Then one of his doll's eyes closed in a solemn wink. "Don't tell me, I tell you. How's that beer? Pretty fucking gnarly, ain't it? Hits the spot after riding that kiddie bike, don't it?" "It sure does," Trash Can Man said, and took another big swallow of warm Coors. He was insane, but not yet insane enough to disagree with the kid while he was driving. Nowhere near. "Well, no sense beating around the motherfucking bush," the kid said, reaching back over the seat to get his own can of suds. "I guess we're going to the same place." "I guess so," Trash said cautiously. "Gonna giant up," the kid said. "Going west. Gonna get in on the motherfucking ground floor. You believe that, Happy Crappy?"
"I guess so."
"You been getting dreams about that boogeyman in the black flight suit, ain't you?"
"You mean the priest?"
"I always mean what I say and say what I mean," the kid said flatly. "Don't tell me a fucking bug, I'll tell you. It's a black flight suit and the guy's got goggles, like in a John Wayne movie about Big Two. Goggles so big you can't see his motherfucking face. Spooky old cock knocker, ain't he?"
"Yeah," Trash Can said and sipped his warm beer. His head was beginning to buzz.
The kid hunched over the orange steering wheel and began to imitate a fighter pilot, one who had done his stuff in Big Two, presumably, in a dogfight. The Deuce Coupe roller-coastered alarmingly from one side of the road to the other as he imitated loops and dives and barrel rolls.
Take that, you fucking kraut. Captain, bandits at 12 o'clock. Turn the air cool cannon on 'em, you fucking dipstick. Taka-taka, taka-taka-taka. We got 'em, sir, all clear. Ha-ooga. Stand down, fellers, ha-ooga.
His face gained no expression as he went through this fantasy. Not a single well-oiled hair fell from grace as he jerked the car back into its lane and pounded on up the road. Trashcan Man's heart thudded heavily in his chest. A light sheen of sweat had oiled his body. He drank his beer. He had to make wee-wee.
"But he don't scare me," the kid said, as if the former topic of conversation had never lapsed.
"Fuck no. He's a hard baby, but the kid has handled hard babies before. I shut him up, and then I shut him down, just like the boss says. You believe that, Happy Crappy?"
"Sure," Trash said.
"You dig the boss?"
"Sure," Trash said. He hadn't the slightest idea who the boss was or had been.
"Fucking better dig the boss. Listen, you know what I'm gonna do?"
"Go west," Trashcan Man hazarded. It seemed safe.
The kid looked impatient.
"After I get there, I mean after. You know what I'm gonna do after?"
"No, what?"
"I'm gonna lay low for a while, check out the situation. Can you dig that, Happy Crappy?"
"Sure," Trash said.
"Fucking A, don't tell me, I'll fucking tell you. Just check it out, check out the big man, then."
The kid fell silent, brooding over the top of his orange steering wheel.
"Then what?" Trashcan asked hesitantly.
"Gonna shut him down. Send him around Dead Man's Cave. Put him out to pasture on the motherfucking Cadillac Ranch. You believe it?"
"Yeah, sure."
"I'm gonna take over," the kid said confidently. "Gonna strip his gears and leave him at the Cadillac Ranch. You stick with me, Trash Man, or whatever the fuck you call yourself. We ain't gonna eat no pork and beans. We're gonna eat more chicken than any man ever seen."
The Deuce Coupe roared down the highway with painted flames shooting up from the manifold. Trashcan Man sat in the passenger seat, a warm beer in his lap, and troubled in his mind. It was almost dawn on the morning of August 5th when Trashcan Man entered Cibola, otherwise known as Vegas. Somewhere in the last 5 miles he had lost his left sneaker, and now, as he walked down the curving exit ramp, his footfalls sounded like this. Slap-thump, slap-thump, slap-thump. They sounded like the flap of a flat tire. He was almost done in, but a little wonder came back as he made his way down the strip, which was jammed with dead cars and quite a few dead people, most of them well picked over by the buzzards. He had made it. He was here in Cibola. He had been tested, and he had passed the test. He saw 100 honky-tonk nightclubs. There were signs that read Liberal Slots, signs that said Bluebell Wedding Chapel and 60-second wedding, but it'll last a lifetime. He saw a silver ghost Rolls-Royce halfway through a plate glass window of an adult bookstore. He saw a naked woman hanging upside down from a lamppost. He saw 2 pages of the Las Vegas Sun go riffling by. The headline that revealed itself over and over again as the paper flapped and turned was, "Plague Grows Worse, Washington Mute." He saw a gigantic billboard which said, "Neil Diamond, the Americana Hotel, June 15th to August 30th. Someone had scrawled the words, "Die Las Vegas for your sins," across the show window of a jewelry store seeming to specialize in nothing but wedding and engagement rings. He saw an overturned grand piano lying in the street like a large dead wooden horse. His eyes were full of these wonders. As he walked on, he began to see other signs, their neon dead this midsummer for the first time in years. Flamingo, The Mint, Dunes, Sahara, Glass Slipper, Imperial. But where were the people? Where was the water? Hardly knowing what he was doing, letting his feet pick their own path, Trashcan turned off the strip. His head dropped forward, his chin resting on his chest. He dozed as he walked, and when his feet tripped over the curbing, when he fell forward and gave himself a bloody nose on the pavement, when he looked up and beheld what was there, he could hardly believe it. Blood ran unnoticed from his nose to his tattered blue shirt.
It was as if he was still dozing and this was his dream. A tall white building stretched up to the desert sky, a monolith in the desert, a needle, a monument, every bit as magnificent as the Sphinx or the Great Pyramid. The windows of its eastern face gave off the fire of the rising sun like an omen. In front of this bone-white desert edifice, flanking its entranceway, were two huge gold pyramids. Over the canopy was a great bronze medallion, and carved on it in bas-relief was the snarling head of a lion. Above this, also in bronze, the simple but mighty legend, MGM Grand Hotel. But what captured his eyes was what stood on the grassy quadrangle between the parking lot and the entranceway. Trashcan stared, an orgasmic shivering consuming him so fiercely that for a moment he could only prop himself on his bloody hands, the unraveling end of the ace bandage trailing between them, and stare at the fountain with his faded blue eyes, eyes that were halfway to being glare-blind by now. A little groaning noise began to escape him. The fountain was working. It was a gorgeous construction of stone and ivory, chased and inlaid with gold. Colored lights played over the spray, making the water purple, then yellow-orange, then red, then green. The constant ticking patter as the spray fell back into the pool was very loud.
"Cibola," he muttered, and struggled to his feet.
His nose was still dripping blood. He began to stagger toward the fountain. His stagger became a trot. The trot became a run, the run a sprint, the sprint a mad dash. His scabbed knees rose, piston-like, almost to his neck. A word began to fly out of his mouth, a long word like a paper streamer that rose to the sky, bringing people to the windows high above. And who saw them? God, perhaps, or the devil, but certainly not the trash can man. The word grew higher and shriller, longer and longer as he approached the fountain. And that word was...
Cibola!
The final ah sound drew out and out, a sound of all the pleasures that all the people who have ever lived on the earth have ever known, and it ended only when he struck the lip of the fountain chest high and yanked himself up and over and into a bath of incredible coolness and mercy. He could feel the pores of his body open like a million mouths and slurp the water in like a sponge. He screamed. He lowered his head, snorted in water, and blew it back out in a combined sneeze and cough that sent blood and water and snot against the side of the fountain in a splat. He lowered his head and drank like a cow.
"Cibola! Cibola!" Trash cried rapturously. "My life for you!"
He dog-paddled his way around the fountain, drank again, then climbed over the edge and fell onto the grass with an awkward thump. It had all been worth it. Everything had been worth it. Water cramps struck him, and he suddenly threw up with a loud grunt. Even throwing up felt grand. He got to his feet, and holding on to the lip of the fountain with his claw hand, he drank again. This time his belly accepted the gift gratefully. Sloshing like a filled goatskin, he staggered toward the alabaster steps which led to the doors of this fabulous place, steps that led between the golden pyramids. Halfway up the steps, a water cramp struck him and doubled him over. When it passed, he lurched gamely onward. The doors were of the revolving type, and it took all his feeble strength to get one of them in motion. He pushed through into a plushy carpeted lobby that seemed miles long. The rug underfoot was thick and lush and cranberry-colored. There was a registration desk, a mail desk, a key desk, the cashier's windows, all empty. To his right, beyond an ornamental grilled railing, was the casino. Trashcan Man stared at it in awe, the serried ranks of slot machines like soldiers standing at parade rest. Beyond them, the roulette and crap tables, the marble railings enclosing the baccarat tables.
"Who's here?"
Trash croaked, but no answer came back. He was afraid then, because this was a place of ghosts, a place where monsters might lurk, but the fear was weakened by his weariness. He stumbled down the steps and into the casino, passing the Cub Bar, where Lloyd Henreid sat silently in the deep shadows, watching him and holding a glass of Poland water. He came to a table upholstered in green baize, the mystic legend, "Dealer must hit 16 and stand on 17," inscribed thereon. Trash climbed up on it and fell instantly asleep. Soon nearly half a dozen men stood around the sleeping ragamuffin that was the trash can man.
"What do we do with him?" Ken DeMott asked.
"Let him sleep," Lloyd answered. "Flag wants him."
"Yeah, where the Christ is Flag, anyway?" another asked.
Lloyd turned to look at the man, who was balding and stood a full foot taller than Lloyd. Nonetheless, he drew back a step at Lloyd's gaze. The stone around Lloyd's neck was the only one that was not solid jet. In the center gleamed a small and disquieting red flaw.
"Are you that anxious to see him, Heck?" Lloyd asked.
"No," the balding man said.
"Hey, Lloyd, you know I didn't—"
"Sure." Lloyd looked down at the man sleeping on the blackjack table. "Flag'll be around," he said. "He's been waiting for this guy. This guy is something special." On the table, oblivious of all this, Trash Can Man slept on. Trash and the kid spent the night of July 18th in a motel in Golden, Colorado. The kid picked two rooms with a connecting door. The connecting door was locked. The kid, now well in the bag, solved this minor problem by blowing the lock off with three bullets from one of his 45s. The kid raised one tiny boot and kicked the door. It shuddered open in a fine blue haze of gun smoke.
"Betcha fuckin' eh," he said. "Which room? Take your pick, Trashy."
Trash Can Man opted for the room on the right and for a while was left alone. The kid had gone out someplace. Trash Can Man was slowly considering the idea of simply fading away into the gloom before something really bad could happen, trying to balance that possibility against his lack of transportation, when the kid returned. Trash Can Man was alarmed to see that he was pushing a shopping cart which was full of six packs of Coors beer. The doll's eyes were now bloodshot and rimmed with red. The pompadour hairdo was coming unraveled like a broken and expanding clock spring, and greasy bunches of hair now hung down over the kid's ears and cheeks, making him look like some dangerous, albeit absurd, caveman who had found a leather jacket left by a time traveler and put it on. The rabbit's feet bobbed back and forth on the belt of the jacket.
"It's warm," the kid said. "But who gives a rip, am I right?"
"Right, absolutely," Trash Can Man said.
"Have a beer, asshole,"
the kid said, and tossed him a can. When Trash Can pulled the ring tab, he got a face full of foam, and the kid roared with oddly diminutive laughter, holding his flat belly with both hands. Trash smiled weakly. He decided that later tonight, after this small monster had succumbed to sleep, he would slip away. He had had enough. And what the kid had said about the Dark Priest? Trash Can Man's fears about that were so big he could not even get them to coalesce. Saying things like that, even if you were joking, was like shitting on the altar of a church or holding your face up to the sky in a thunderstorm and begging the lightning to come hit you. The worst thing was that he didn't think the kid had been joking. Trash Can Man had no intention of going up into the mountains and around all those hairpin turns with this crazy dwarf who drank all day, and apparently all night, and who talked about overthrowing the dark man and putting himself in his place. Meanwhile, the kid had put away two beers in 2 minutes, crushed the cans, and tossed them indifferently on one of the room's twin beds. He was looking morosely at the RCA chromacolor, a fresh Coors in his left hand and the 45 he had used to blow open the connecting door in his right.
"No fucking electricity, so there ain't no fucking TV," he said.
As he grew more drunk, his southern accent grew more pronounced, putting fur on his words.
"Don't I hate that? I love it when all the assholes got wasted, but Jesus jumped up bald-headed old Christ, where's HBO? Where's the goddamn wrestling matches? Where's the Playboy Channel? That was a good one, Trashy. I mean, they never show guys getting right down and eating hair pie, munching the old bearded clam, you know what I mean? But some of those ladies had legs went right up to their chins, you know what the motherfucker I'm talking about?"
"Sure," Trash Can said.
"You fucking A, don't tell me, I'll tell you."
The kid stared at the dead TV.
"You numb cunt,"
he said, and shot the TV. The picture tube imploded with a great hollow bang. Glass belched out onto the carpet. Trash Can Man raised his arm to shield his eyes, and his beer gurgled out onto the green nylon shag when he did.
"Oh, look at that, you dumb dork!" the kid exclaimed. His tone was one of great outrage. Suddenly the .45 was pointed at Trash, its bore as big and dark as an ocean liner's smokestack. Trash Can felt his groin go numb. He thought he might be pissing himself, but had no way of telling for sure.
"I'm going to ventilate your thinker machine for that," the kid said. "You done spilt the beer. If it was any other kind, I wouldn't do it, but that was Coors you spilled. I'd piss Coors if I could. You believe that, Happy Crappy?"
"Sure," Trash Can whispered.
"And do you think they're making any more Coors these days, Trash? That seemed very fucking likely to you?"
"No," Trash Can whispered. "Guess not.
You fucking right. It's a endangered species."
He raised the gun slightly. Trash Can Man thought it was the end of his life, the end of his life for sure. Then the kid lowered the gun again, slightly. He had an absolutely vacant look on his face. Trash Can guessed this expression indicated deep thought.
"I tell you what, Trash, you get you another can, and you chug it. If you can chug the whole thing, I won't send you to the Cadillac Ranch. You believe that, Happy Crappy?"
What's chugging?"
"Jesus Christ, boy, you as dumb as a stone boat. Drink the whole can without stopping, that's what chugging is. Where you been spending your time, motherfucking Africa? You want to get on the stick, Trashy? If I have to put one in you, it goes right in your eye. I got this sucker loaded up with dum-dums. Open you right the fuck up, turn you into a fucking buffet dinner for the cockroaches in this dump."
He gestured with the pistol, his red eyes fixed on Trash. There was a speckle of beer foam on his upper lip. Trash Can went to the cardboard carton, selected a beer, and popped the top.
"Go on, have a drop. And if you puke it back up, you're a gom fucking goose."
Trash Can Man upended the can. Beer gurgled out. He swallowed convulsively, his Adam's apple going up and down like a monkey on a stick. When the can was empty, he dropped it between his feet, fought a seemingly endless battle with his gorge, and won his life back in one long, echoing belch. The kid threw his small head back and laughed with tinkling delight. Trash swayed on his feet, grinning sickly. All at once he was a lot drunk instead of a little. The kid holstered his piece.
"Okay, not bad, Trash Can Man, not too motherfucking shabby."
The kid continued to drink. Squashed cans piled up on the motel bed. Trash held a can of Coors between his knees and sipped on it whenever the kid seemed to be looking at him with disapproval. The kid muttered on and on, his voice growing ever lower and more southern as the empties piled up. He talked of places he had been, races he had won, a load of dope he had run across the border from Mexico in a laundry truck with a 442 Hemi engine under the hood. "Nasty stuff," he said. All dope was nasty motherfucking stuff. He never touched it himself, but boy howdy, after you muled a few loads of that shit, you could wipe your ass with gold toilet paper. At last, he began to nod off, the little red eyes closing for longer and longer periods, then coming reluctantly back to half-mast.
"Gonna get him, Trashy," the kid muttered. "I'll go out there, check it out, keep kissing his motherfucking ass until I see how the land lays. But nobody orders this kid around. No fucking body. Not for long. I don't do piecework. If I'm on a job, I run it. That's just my style. I don't know who he is or where he comes from or how he can broadcast into our motherfucking thinking machines, but I'm gonna run him right the fuck."
Huge yawn.
"Out of town. Gonna shut him down. Gonna send him to the Cadillac Ranch. Stick with me, Crash, or whoever the fuck you are."
He collapsed slowly backward onto the bed. His can of beer, freshly opened, fell from his relaxing hand. More Coors puddled on the rug. The case was gone, and by Trash Can's reckoning, the kid had gotten through 21 cans of it himself. The Trash Can Man couldn't understand how such a little man could drink so much beer, but he did understand what time it was. Time for him to go. He knew that, but he felt drunk and weak and ill. What he wanted more than anything was to sleep for a little while. That would be all right, wouldn't it? The kid was apt to sleep like a log all night, maybe half of tomorrow morning, too. Plenty of time for him to take a little nap.
So he went into the other room, tiptoeing in spite of the kid's comatose state, and closed the connecting door as well as he could, which wasn't very well. The force of the bullets had warped it somehow. There was a wind-up alarm clock on the dresser. Trash wound it, set it for midnight since he didn't know and didn't care what time it really was, and then set the alarm for 5 o'clock. He lay down on one of the twin beds without even stopping to take off his sneakers. He was asleep in 5 minutes. He woke up sometime later, in the dark grave of the morning, with the smell of beer and puke blowing across his face in a dry little gale. Something was in bed with him, something hot and smooth and squirmy. His first panicky thought was that a weasel had somehow gotten right out of his Nebraska dream and into reality. A whimpery little moan came out of him as he realized that the animal in bed with him, while not big, was too big to be a weasel. He had a headache from the beer. It drilled mercilessly at his temples. "Grab on me," the kid whispered in the dark. Trashcan's hand was seized and led to something hard and cylindrical and throbbing like a piston.
"Jerk me off. Go on, jerk me off. You know what to do. I saw that the first time I looked at you. Come on, you motherfucking jerk off. Jerk me off."
Trashcan Man knew how to do it. In many ways, it was a relief. He knew about it from the long nights in Stir. They said it was bad, that it was queer, but what the queers did was better than what some of the others did, the ones who spent their nights sharpening spoon handles into shanks, and the ones who just lay there on their bunks, cracking their knuckles and looking at you and grinning. The kid had put Trashcan's hand on the kind of gun he understood. He closed his hand around it and began. After it was over, the kid would fall asleep again. Then he would creep out. The kid's breath was becoming ragged. He began to bump his hips in time with Trashcan's strokes. Trash did not at first realize the kid was also unbuckling his belt, then slipping his jeans and underpants down to his knees. Trash let him. It didn't matter if the kid wanted to slip it to him. Trash had had it slipped to him before. He didn't die. It wasn't poison. Then his hand froze. Whatever it was suddenly pressing against his anus, it wasn't flesh. It was cold steel. And suddenly he knew what it was.
"No," he whispered.
His eyes were wide and terrified in the dark. Now he could dimly see that homicidal doll's face in the mirror, hanging over his shoulder with its hair and its red eyes.
"Yes," the kid whispered back. "And you don't want to lose a stroke, Trashy. Not one motherfucking stroke. Or I might just pull the trigger on this thing. Blow your shit factory all to hell and gone. Dum-dums, Trashy. You believe that, Happy Crappy?"
Whining, Trashcan began to stroke him again. His whines became little gasps of pain as the barrel of the .45 worked its way into him, rotating, gouging, tearing. And could it be that this was exciting him? It was. Eventually, his excitement became apparent to the kid.
"Like it, don't you?" the kid panted. "I knew you would, you bag of puss. You like having it up your ass, don't you? Say yes, puss bag. Say yes, or right the hell you go."
"Yes," Trashcan Man whimpered.
"Want me to do it to you?"
He didn't. Excited or not, he didn't, but he knew better than to say so.
"Yes. I wouldn't touch your dick if it was diamonds. Do it yourself. Why you think God gave you two hands?"
How long did it go on? God might know. The Trashcan Man did not. A minute, an hour, an age, what was the difference? He became sure that at the instant of the kid's orgasm he would feel two things simultaneously. The hot jet of the small monster's semen on his belly and the mushrooming agony of a dum-dum bullet roaring up through his vitals. The ultimate enema. Then the kid's hips froze and his penis went through its convulsions in Trashcan Man's hand. His fist became slick, like a rubber glove. An instant later, the pistol was withdrawn. Silent tears of relief gushed down Trashcan's cheeks. He was not afraid to die, at least not in the service of the Dark Man, but he did not want to die in this dark motel room at the hands of a psychopath. Not before he had seen Cibola. He would have prayed to God, but he knew instinctively that God would not lend a sympathetic ear to those who had thrown their allegiance to the Dark Man. And what had God ever done for the Trash Can Man anyway? Or for Donald Merwin Elbert either, for that matter? In the breathing silence, the kid's voice rose in song, off-key, cracking, trailing down toward sleep.
"My buddies and me are getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us, and they leave us alone."
He began to snore.
"Now I'll leave," Trash Can Man thought, but he was afraid that if he moved, he would wake the kid up.
"I'll leave just as soon as I'm sure he's really asleep. 5 minutes. Shouldn't take any longer than that."
But no one knows how long 5 minutes is in the dark. It might be fair to say that in the dark, 5 minutes does not exist. He waited. He rolled in and out of a doze without knowing he had dozed. Before long, he had slipped down the slide of sleep. He was on a dark road that was very high. The stars seemed close enough to reach up and touch. It seemed you could just pick them off the sky and pop them into a jar like fireflies. It was bitterly cold. It was dark. Dimly, frosted with starshine, he could see the living rock faces through which this highway had been cut. And in the darkness, something was walking toward him. And then his voice, coming from nowhere, coming from everywhere.
"In the mountains I'll give you a sign. I'll show you my power. I'll show you what happens to those who would set themselves against me. Wait. Watch."
Red eyes began to open in the dark as if someone had set out 3 dozen danger lamps with hoods on them, and now that someone was pulling the hoods off in pairs. They were eyes, and they surrounded the Trash Can Man in a fey ring. At first he thought they were the eyes of weasels, but as the ring tightened around him, he saw they were great gray mountain wolves, their ears cocked forward, foam dripping from their dark muzzles. He was afraid.
"They are not for you, my good and faithful servant. See?"
And they were gone. Just like that, the panting great timber wolves were gone.
"Watch," the voice said. "Wait," the voice said.
The dream ended. He woke to discover bright sunshine falling in through the motel room window. The kid was standing in front of it, seeming none the worse for wear from his bout with the now-defunct Adolf Coors Company the night before. His hair was combed into its former shining swirls and eddies, and he was admiring his reflection in the glass. He had slipped his leather jacket over the back of a chair. The rabbit's feet dangled from the belt like tiny corpses from a gibbet.
"Hey, puss bag, I thought I was going to have to grease your hand again to wake you up. Come on, we got us a big day ahead. A lot of stuff going to happen today, am I right?"
"You sure are," the Trash Can Man replied with a queer smile.
When the Trash Can Man swam out of sleep on the evening of August 5th, he was still lying on the blackjack table in the casino of the MGM Grand Hotel. Sitting backward on a chair in front of him was a young man with lank straw-blonde hair and mirror sunglasses. The first thing Trash noticed was the stone which hung about his neck in the V of his open sport shirt, black, with a red flaw in the center, like the eye of a wolf in the night. He tried to say he was thirsty and managed only a weak "gaw" sound.
"You sure did spend some time in the hot sun, I guess," Lloyd Henreid said.
"Are you him?" Trash whispered. "Are you
the big guy?" "No, I'm not him. Flag's in L.A. He knows you're here, though. I talked to him on the radio this afternoon."
"Is he coming?"
"What, just to see you? Hell no. He'll be here in his own good time. You and me, guy, we're just little people. He'll be here in his own good time."
And he reiterated the question he had asked the tall man that morning, not long after Trash Can Man had stumbled in.
"Are you that anxious to see him?"
"Yes. No. I don't know."
"Well, whichever way it turns out to be, you'll get your chance."
"Thirsty?"
"Sure. Here."
He handed over a large thermos filled with cherry Kool-Aid. Trash Can drained it at a draft, then leaned over, holding his belly and groaning. When the cramp had passed, he looked at Lloyd with dumb gratitude.
"Think you could eat something?" Lloyd asked.
Yes, I think so.
Lloyd turned to a man standing behind them. The man was idly whirling a roulette wheel, then letting the little white ball bounce and rattle.
Roger, go tell Whitney or Stephanie Ann to rustle this man up some fries and a couple of hamburgers.
Oh, shit. What am I thinking about? He'll Ralph all over the place. Soup. Get him some soup. That okay, man?
Anything,
Trash said gratefully.
We got a guy here, Lloyd said. Name of Whitney Horgan. Used to be a butcher. He's a fat, loud sack of shit, but don't that man know how to cook? Jesus.
And they got everything here. The Jennies were still running when we moved in, and the freezers are full. Fucking Vegas, ain't it the goddamnedest place you ever saw?
Yeah, Trash said.
He liked Lloyd already, and he didn't even know his name.
It's Cibola.
Say what?
Cibola.
Searched for by many.
Yeah, been plenty people searching for it over the years, but most of them go away sort of sorry they found it.
Well, you call it whatever you want, buddy. Looks like you almost cooked yourself getting here. What's your name?
Trash Can Man.
Lloyd didn't seem to think this a strange name at all.
Name like that, I bet you used to be a biker.
He stuck out a hand. The tips of his fingers still bore the fading marks of his stay in the Phoenix jail, where he had almost died of starvation.
I'm Lloyd Henreid. Pleased to meet you,
Trash. Welcome aboard the good ship Lollipop.
Trash Can Man shook the offered hand and had to struggle to keep from weeping with gratitude. So far as he could remember, this was the first time in his life someone had offered to shake his hand. He was here. He had been accepted. At long last, he was on the inside of something. He would have walked through twice as much desert as he had for this moment, would have burned the other arm and both legs as well.
Thanks, he muttered. Thanks, Mr. Henreid.
Ship, brother, if you don't call me Lloyd, we'll have to throw that soup out.
Lloyd, then. Thanks, Lloyd.
That's better. After you eat, I'll take you upstairs and put you in a room of your own. We'll get you doing something tomorrow. The big guy's got something of his own for you, I think, but until then there's plenty for you to do. We've got some of the place running again, but nowhere near all of it. There's a crew up at Boulder Dam trying to get all the power back on. There's another one working on water supplies. We've got scout parties out. We've been pulling in 6 or 8 people a day, but we'll keep you off that detail for a while. Looks like you've had enough sun to last you a month.
I guess I have,
Trash Can Man said with a weak smile. He was already willing to lay down his life for Lloyd Henreid. Gathering up all of his courage, he pointed at the stone which lay in the hollow of Lloyd's throat.
That?
Yeah, us guys who are sort of in charge all wear 'em. His idea. It's jet. Not really a rock at all, you know. It's like an oil bubble.
I mean, the red light. The eye.
Looks like that to you, too, huh? It's a flaw. Special from him. I'm not the smartest guy he's got, not even the smartest guy in the good old Lost Wages, not by a long shot. But I'm... shit. I guess you'd say I'm his mascot.
He looked closely at Trash.
Maybe you, too. Who knows?
Not me, that's for sure.
He's a close one, Flag is. Anyway, we heard about your special. Me and Whitney. That's not the regular drill at all. Too many coming in to take special notice of many.
He paused. Although I guess he could if he wanted to. I guess he could take notice of just about anybody. Trash Can Man nodded.
He can do magic, Lloyd said, his voice becoming slightly hoarse. I seen it. I'd hate to be the people against him, you know.
Yes, Trash Can said. I saw what happened to the kid.
What kid?
The guy I was with until we got into the mountains.
He shuddered.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, man, here comes your soup. And Whitney, put a burger on the side after all. You love it. The guy makes great burgers, but try not to puke, okay?
Okay. Me, I got places to go and people to see. If my old buddy Poe could see me now, he'd never believe it. I'm busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. Catch you later.
Sure, Trash Can said, and then added, almost timidly,
Thanks. Thanks for everything.
Don't thank me, Lloyd said amiably.
Thank him.
I do,
Trash Can Man said.
Every night. But he was talking to himself. Lloyd was already halfway down the lobby, talking with the man who had brought the soup and the hamburger. Trashcan Man watched them fondly until they were out of sight, and then he began to chow down, eating ravenously until almost everything was gone. He would have been fine if he hadn't looked down into the soup bowl. It was tomato soup, and it was the color of blood. He pushed the bowl aside, his appetite suddenly gone. It was all very well for him to tell Lloyd Henreid he didn't want to talk about the kid. It was quite another thing to stop thinking about what had happened to him. He walked over to the roulette wheel, sipping at the glass of milk that had come with his food. He gave the wheel an idle twist and dropped the little white marble into the dish. It rolled around the rim, then hit the slots below and began to rack it back and forth. He thought about the kid. He wondered if someone would come and show him which room was his. He thought about the kid. He wondered if the ball would fetch up on a red number or a black one, but mostly he thought about the kid. The bouncing, jittering ball caught in one of the slots, this time for good. The wheel came to a stop. The ball was sitting under the green double zero. House spin. On the cloudless 80-degree day when they headed west from Golden directly into the Rockies along Interstate 70, the kid had given up Coors in favor of a bottle of Rebel Yell whiskey. Two more bottles sat between the two of them on the drive shaft hump, each neatly packed into an empty cardboard milk carton so the bottles wouldn't roll around and break. The kid would nip at the bottle, chase the nip with a swallow of Pepsi-Cola, and then holler, "Hot damn!" or "Yahoo!" or "Sex machine!" at the top of his lungs. He remarked several times that he would piss Rebel Yell if he could. He asked Trashcan Man if he believed that happy-crappy. Trashcan Man, pale with fright and still hung over from his three beers of the night before, said he did. Even the kid couldn't stampede along at 90 on these roads. He lowered his speed to 60 and muttered about the goddamn fucking mountains under his breath. Then he brightened. "When we get over in Utah and Nevada, we'll make up plenty of lost time, Trashy. This little darling will do 160 on the flat. You believe that, Happy Crappy?"
"Sure is a nice car," Trashcan said with a sick doggy smile.
"Bet your ass." He nipped Rebel Yell, chased it with Pepsi, yelled "Yahoo!" at the top of his lungs. Trash stared morbidly out at the passing scenery, which was now washed with mid-morning sunshine. The interstate had been blasted right into the shoulder of the mountain, and at times they were traveling between huge cliffs of rock, the cliffs he had seen in his dream of the night before. After dark, would those red eyes open again? He shuddered. A short while later, he became aware that their speed had dropped from 60 to 40, then to 30. The kid was swearing monotonously and horribly under his breath. The deuce coupe wove in and out of steadily thickening traffic, all of it stalled and deadly silent. "What the fuck is this?" the kid raged. "What did they all decide to die at 10,000 motherfucking feet? Hey, you stupid fucks, out of my way, you hear? Get the fuck out of my way!" Trashman cringed. They rounded a curve and faced a horrendous four-car pileup which blocked the westbound lanes of I-70 completely. A dead man covered with blood which had dried to an uneven crack glaze long since lay spread-eagled face down on the road. Near him was a broken Chatty Cathy doll. Any way around the jam on the left was blocked by steel guardrail posts 6 feet high. On the right, the land fell away into cloudy distance. The kid gulped Rebel Yell and swung the deuce coupe toward the drop-off.
"Hang on, Trashy," he whispered. "We're going round."
"There's no room,"
Trashcan Man rasped. His throat felt like the side of a steel file.
"Yeah, just enough,"
the kid whispered. His eyes were glittering. He began to edge the car off the road. The right-hand wheels were now hissing in the dirt of the shoulder.
"Count me out," Trashcan said hurriedly and grabbed for the door handle.
"You sit," said the kid, "or you're going to be one dead puss bag."
Trash turned his head and looked into the bore of a 45. The kid giggled tensely. Trashcan Man sat back. He wanted to close his eyes, but could not. On his side of the car, the last 6 inches of shoulder dropped from view. Now he was looking straight down at a long vista of blue-gray pines and huge tumbled boulders. He could imagine the deuce coupe's wide oval tires now 4 inches from the edge,
Now two.